Ryan, you are going to get the first question, and then we'll go to Jack, we'll be after Ryan, and then we'll go down the line. 6% of the U.S. population owns 84% of the U.S. wealth. This leaves 16% for the rest of us. How does a middle class to lower class citizen survive on this? Would you support a $15 an hour minimum wage?
I would not support a $15 minimum wage. And the reason is that, unfortunately, I have a finance and a finance major and a economics minor. And I know that does not work. I know that that being said, that McDonald's right now, you can go and you can order from a kiosk instead of a person. I never do that. I go and talk to the person. I know at Walmart you can go to self-checkout. I try not to do that because I know it's taking a job away from a person. But what we need to do is we need to work with our technology schools. UB Tech out in the basin and USU have a wonderful program where every child can get a certificate or some type of degree before they leave high school. Education is the key. I think that minimum wage is a starting position. It is not an ending position. I think we need to make people better qualified so that they can rise up the ladder. And I was happy to make minimum wage when I was 15 and working at McDonald's. I didn't think that was the best thing, and I pursued my education. I worked in the oil field, I worked offshore to better myself. Like I said, my dad worked in the oil field, my mom was a teacher. They wanted me to be better than them. I want the next generation to be better than I am. And I will put the money in education where it needs to be to do that.
Yeah, I'm not a $15 minimum wage fan either. I think the issue here is to separate separate the issue of the ability to make a living from the ability to be awarded a living. In Park City, minimum wage is $15. You can't find an employee in the town if you offer less than $15. So there's a market wage there that is higher than minimum wage, about 2x minimum wage, national minimum wage. My father is a small business owner. I know how small business works. The owner gets paid last. Basically, small business, there's not a lot of protection, pricing power, and all those kind of things you talk about in economics class. You're out there, doing hand-to-hand combat. And to have the state enforce a wage is going to have a huge impact on small employers. I think it will be counterproductive. I should have brought it with me. There's a fabulous book that was written in 1947 called Economics in One Lesson. Brief read. I'd be happy to go. I've got one copy in my car, but I'd be happy to bring them back. I would humbly suggest, just take a look at that. The guy who wrote it, Henry Hazlitt, was a very smart guy. He goes through issues of that sort, tariffs, minimum wage, other administered prices. Administered prices tend to distort markets and lead to what economists call deadweight losses. That would happen with a $15 minimum wage. I think there are other solutions. Education is the way to go. You've got to give people an avenue as opposed to administering the price. Thanks.
So I know a couple people here in town who don't earn $15 an hour and suffer because of that. And I'm going to give you a little bit of background on myself. I was an independent for most of my life, and yet I tended to work with Democratic candidates and causes because the history of the Democratic Party is with aligning itself with the worker. And that's something I feel very strongly about doing if I come to the state legislature. Is $15 an hour a good idea? Yes, it recognizes the fact that our workers are living in poverty. And it actually ends up being almost sort of a corporate handout. In that, if someone is earning $7, $8, $9, $10 an hour, they are eligible for a SNAP, they're eligible for CHIP. And so my tax dollars are going to help them feed their family. And in fact, most people who are using SNAP and CHIP, and I deal with that every day at work, to feed their children, are doing it working one or two jobs at incredibly low wages, and they cannot afford to get by. Of course, what would be one other thing that we could do in addition to raising the minimum wage? It would be to provide health care, because that is the thing that gets the workers in the end. My husband is a carpenter. He's had two really bad injuries. There is no person out there who works as a plumber, an electrician, a carpenter, or anything who doesn't injure themselves at one point. And one trip to the ER will bankrupt your family if you don't have health care. So there are several things that are happening to the workers in our country that are making them very dissatisfied because they're impoverished despite working. So yes, $15 minimum wage. Do we necessarily need to legislate that at the state right now? I think we've got other work to do. We've got health care to address as well, because that's where people are really hurting right now. And as far as McDonald's come, I just have to comment. Yes, I worked scooping ice cream as a teenager, but the people working at McDonald's now are 50 and 60 years old, and they're trying to hang on until they can get their Medicaid. And that's not what our country should be doing for our older population.
Thank you. I'll echo some of what's been said. I think that it's interesting that we push for some certain minimum wage when in Seattle that minimum wage doesn't do. In Salt Lake that minimum wage doesn't do. In Berlin it might be enough. I think we really need to look at regional costs for people and cost of living in the areas in which they live. Minimum wage as it stands right now might be enough if you live in a rural community. I was listening to a story on the radio on the way over here, and it said that in order to pay for a two-bedroom apartment in Salt Lake right now, you need to have a household income of $37,000. That's $18 an hour. $15 isn't going to cover that. So we really need to look at what the regional needs are to have a sufficient quality of life and address them more regionally rather than at a state level or at a federal level. I also agree that my boys, again, I will refer back to them, are cooks in Salt Lake. They work 60 to 80 hours a week. They don't drive cars. I'm subsidizing their apartment in Salt Lake right now because they can't afford it. And they don't have health care. So when we have people that work full time, regardless of their wages, I think we need to deal with health care again. People who work full time shouldn't be subject to not having health care. My boys work harder than most, and without that as a basic need, they can't survive well. We have too many people like that. We also have moved from a society where our teenagers were the ones getting minimum wage, as she said, to lots of our people getting minimum wage. And like she said, when our older people are having to work minimum wage jobs, whether that's Home Depot or McDonald's or whatever else, just to survive until they hit Medicare age, I think we have an issue with funding in our country. I think we need to have an equitable system that provides a recommended wage so people can have a quality of life that works with good health care. I think we're letting things down on many fronts, and minimum wage isn't, setting a $15 minimum wage isn't going to solve those issues when you look at the deeper systemic problems that go along with that.
Thank you. What a great topic. First of all, I think we have to realize that the minimum wage is legislated or determined actually by the Fair Labor Standards Act, and that's a federal law, not a state law. So I actually believe with Jack, I'm a fiscal conservative with a social conscience, and so I think that there is a term, it's called what the market bears or what the free market is about. I was in Vernal 10 years ago when Bob Bennett was in the Senate for a rural conference, and there were signs at McDonald's advertising $500 sign-on bonuses. And that's because you didn't have enough workers there to be able to support that infrastructure. I don't know what their hourly wage was, but I bet you it was more than $7.25 an hour. In Park City, I agree. It's what the market will bear. If they don't pay above that amount, they won't have the workers. So I don't believe it's something that we necessarily need to do as a state. It would be nice if our federal government actually looked at this figure and did a cost of living adjustment compared to what it was in the 1970s. I think that would be fair and just, but not something that I would actually lead on trying to get the $15 raise on this.
Thank you. Now we are entering our last question. and then we will have 2-minute closing statements. So the last question, Jack, you will start this, and then we'll go to Pat and down the row. Do you anticipate any state Senate votes on environmental issues during your first year, such as air quality or protection of public lands? If so, how do you plan to vote?
I love questions like that. You know, I get asked questions like this occasionally, and I can't give you an answer, yes or no answer, because I haven't seen the bill. What I believe is that, you know, we've got the Uinta Basin, they've recently had an issue with non-attainment with air quality. Creation of ozone, and the question is ozone doesn't exist in nature, it happens as a photoreactive, it has interaction of volatile fumes along with NOx and SOx, and how much of that is coming out of wellheads. Nobody wants to breathe bad air. Nobody wants to drink dirty water. I don't. I don't think anybody here does. Non-attainment with ozone leads to what people refer to as a sunburn of your lungs. Not good. Turns out that I think Utah has one of the highest rates of lung cancer for non-smokers. Might be something in the air. So I'm a big fan of use it, don't abuse it. We've got a big energy sector out there. It's not going to stop producing. It's probably going to grow as the nation achieves energy independence and the price of oil at $65. There's going to be more that goes, but it's got to be done responsibly. And I'm not one of those guys that wants to chase the last molecule of carbon. It's got to be something that makes sense both from an economic perspective as well as from a health perspective. But you know, I want to live to a ripe old age, and I don't want to have sunburned lungs. So yeah, if it's crafted correctly, I'm a big fan of protecting the environment. Thanks.
In your first year, I think we all accept this role and say how much we want to make a difference. But your first year is really about listening, learning, and understanding how the system works. If someone put before us a bill, I would carefully look at it. Clean air is a right, it's not a privilege, and our environment is extremely precious to us. Utah has a reputation of being an outdoor recreation king and queen. If we don't protect that, we will lose a significant part of our economy. So that's kind of a backhanded answer to say that I do support environmental issues, but in my first year, I must sit there and understand how the system really works. We're all new. How the system works, we're junior senators, and wait for someone to actually propose something that we can begin to act upon. So, thank you.
I've never met anyone that says, you know, that water's not dirty enough. I'd like a little bit more dirt than that. You know, as a Republican, some people say, oh, well, all you worry is about is money. No, I worry about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the air quality in the basin is an ozone problem. It's not a particulate problem like it is in Salt Lake City. So we each have our own issues. And the bad thing is the wind usually blows east, and you get the bad there. We get the bad, and Colorado gets the ozone and the particulate from us. That being said, we have a power plant out there. It's coal-powered. That's one of the last ones. Deseret Power, in the last 3 years, they have reduced their NOx pollutants by 60%. And, what I would love to do is I would love to take and replace that with another power plant that has natural gas that we produce right there. We don't have to ship it off. We can use it. We can sell it to California or whoever and grow our economy. There's also the old saying, he who controls the land controls the economy. And, you know, 68% of Utah is owned by the federal government. And that's nice when you want to go camping. But PILT, payment in lieu of taxes, the federal government pays Uinta County and your county $1.72 per year per acre for rent or for taxes on that. Wouldn't you love to have that type of tax rate? We need to get the Fed to pay their fair share, and that would help our economies in all five counties.
I'm laughing tonight because I think you've got five people up here who think more alike than different, and the answers are reflected. So it's hard to answer how you would vote on a particular bill without knowing what the particular bill is. And I think we've all kind of said that in different ways. There's no question that all of us are concerned about air quality. I lived for 33 years in Cache Valley, and we came and spent one Christmas in Park City, and I thought, I'm done with Cache Valley. That's what motivated me to move. Got a job at the State Office of Education. Couldn't afford to live in Park City. Thought, I'm not living in Salt Lake, so we figured out a way to live in Park City. I have the privilege of being able to do that. Too many people don't have that privilege. As we look at air quality issues and look at the data concerning the impact of those air quality issues, we have higher miscarriage rates, higher child things like autism. We have higher early death rates for children. I mean, we have a lot of impacts from air quality that I don't think we pay enough attention to in the conversation about air quality. You mentioned lung cancer. That's obviously another one. If we looked at the damage that bad air does to us and to our society, I think we would address it more strongly. And I think that's one of the things. I'm a researcher at heart. That's what I do all the time, statistics and data. And I think that one of the things I would do in my first year is make sure I had plenty of data in my hands to go and say, here's the impacts of poor air quality. Let's address it. So regardless of what that bill is, it needs to be something that looks at the evidence. Public lands, I think we're going to see votes for public lands. I think it's a hot topic in this state. Again, I mentioned a while ago that one of the things I need to see happen is more voices heard at the table, and I think that our public lands issues haven't included all the voices. The Bears Ears issue, clearly the tribes are upset about that, the energy folks are upset about that, but one of the voices you don't hear is the school public trust lands. And so they were waiting until they saw what happened with Bears Ears, but they had a tremendous amount, the school trust lands, there's a large number of acreage, 1 out of 9 acres, in the Bears Ears that they were concerned about recovering by trading out. So again, all voices need to be at the table as we discuss things like public lands and air quality and make sure that we acknowledge and honor the voices.
So it is amazing how we're all agreeing on some of the basics. A couple new thoughts to toss out there. Just like I mentioned with medical marijuana, we're the 30th state to be considering that. Let's look at the gold standard. Let's look at the highest quality, and let's bring that to Utah for that issue. Why not do that for air quality as well? If the Uinta Basin wants to expand their production of carbon-rich energies, there is an economy in creating carbon sequestration in reduced and cleaner coals. Right now, Japan and Germany, and go to Houston if they want to find out about the hot new technology in natural gas and coal. Why are they not coming here? I want us to have the gold standard. I want us to have the cleanest coal and natural gas and oil companies, and to have the lowest amount of air pollution that happens because of our natural energy sector. That is a part of our economy. Yet that requires a commitment to saying there's an opportunity in protecting the environment that is a new industry and a new business, and we don't want to get left behind. Also, I think it's interesting and will come up that renewables, whether hydro or biomass or wind or solar, are big money. And why not take this insatiable need for that from here in Wasatch and Summit and let some of the other counties earn some money from that? Trust me, Wasatch and Summit are going to be paying big money for access to renewables soon, and some of the other counties ought to look at that as a big economic opportunity. And then last thing I would mention before, when I had a moment, the three things that I think the state should really focus on and has a job to do regardless of county are education, infrastructure, and healthcare. Other than that, we need to err on the side of being hands-off. And I think the federal and public lands issue has become so politicized, a lot of people are not trusting the parties to be honest and to be looking out for the next generation. Access to wilderness and to vistas is big money in Utah, and we need to respect that as an industry as well. So I look forward to seeing whether or not we get an opportunity to make those calls.
We're going to close this evening with 2-minute closing statements. Pat, would you like to start us off?
I would. Thank you so much.
I would first like to remind you that I am the only candidate here from the Hood, from Wasatch County. I possess the longest residency in Summit County, in the Wasatch Back, which is Summit County. I've lived there, and I live also here in the greater Heber Valley. My experience in the Uinta Basin is professional through economic development. I think I have a grounded understanding of our district, but I have much to learn. I have a great friend who said they would never vote for someone that they wouldn't have dinner with. I would like to share with you that some of the feedback from the other candidates publicly is that I'm lovely. Thank you. I like being called lovely. Wouldn't you want someone who was experienced, capable, committed, and also caring and passionate and lovely to represent you in the Senate? Deals are frequently made over dinner, and I would enjoy that opportunity, being the lovely person I am. I'd like to close with a quote from Abraham Lincoln. He kind of talks in Gettysburg ease. "The dogmas of the past are inadequate to the stormy present of this occasion. This occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with that occasion. Our minds are still hypnotized by thinking of the past. As our case is new, so we must think anew and act anew. Let's stop the status quo. Let's get some common sense in government. Vote for Pat. I would love to serve you. Thank you."
This is something that a politician will never tell you. I promise you that we will not agree on everything. But I will promise you that I will listen to what you have to say, because I don't know everything, and I'm smart enough to know that I don't know everything. That being said, I'm a small government person. I believe that one of the best things that we can do as representatives of and for you is to try to get the government out of your lives as much as possible. It needs to be there in certain places, but the places it doesn't need to be there, we need to get out and let you do your thing. I want you to know that I'm a multi-dimensional person. I'm a budget hawk. I'm one of the most conservative people you'll ever meet in your life, and I'm one of the most giving people you'll ever see in your life. I would love for you to take a look at my bio. I give back to my community. I give to organizations that make my heart full, and I think that Utah is one of those special places. We're twice the national average for giving and donating back our time and our resources. We're good people, and we need to send good people to the legislature. I would like to put an office here in the Wasatch Back. I've already promised that I would put an office in Roosevelt and work there at least one or two days a month. I would like to do the same thing here. That being said, I can't find a place because you guys are growing so fast. But I will be the person. I will come, and because I live way out there, I will come and I will be accessible to you. I'd like to finish with one thing that George Washington said at his first inauguration. "All I come to you with is integrity and firmness." Vote for Brian Gorham. Thank you.
There's many things that we didn't get to talk about today that I think are very important to me, but I need to follow on with Pat's. I've lived in Utah since I was 19. That's now 41 years, and I'm married to a man whose family established Deweyville. So I understand Utah issues, Utah values. That's been my whole adult life. Lived in rural areas in Cache County, taught in Cache County, Box Elder, and have been around for a long time. Sometimes I wonder why. At any rate, there's issues that we didn't talk about that I'm very passionate about. Net neutrality is one of them, for instance. Cybersecurity is another one. I'm a tech nut, and cybersecurity is scary for me right now. We didn't get to talk about getting the big money out of politics, which I also feel very passionate about, and about term limits. And so I'm sad that none of you put forth questions about that. while some of those are more federal issues than Utah issues, Utah has big money issues too. I couldn't run against the person I wanted to run against in the House because he had $150,000 of his own money. I wish I did as an educator. At any rate, there's many issues that I think we all feel passionately about, and I hope that as you move forward and just make your decisions about people who sounded very similar tonight, you ask more questions, you look at our platforms, you do your homework. I hope we encourage everybody to do their homework this year, because I think that as a nation we are hurting because people haven't done enough homework in the past. So as we go forward from tonight, I'm really glad that we've had the opportunity to be here. I recognize that I haven't been in Summit County as long as I was in Cache, and there are many different issues here. Like Cache is rural, Boxhilder is rural, Uinta is rural. I think I understand the rural issues well. I've been in Salt Lake and surrounding areas long enough. I think I understand the city issues here as well. So I hope that you will consider, as you vote in November, the new party, the new kids on the block. We hope to be able to pull voting members. I doubt we'll pull many Democrats, but at least from Republicans and independents. And so remember that there is the new party in the state, and we hope to become a driving force as a voice in the state. I would like to represent this district and I think do it well. So go for Kathy. Thanks.
So I think I am a little bit different than some of the other things that have been brought up as positives here today, and yet I'd like to toss out to you the argument that one is a local or that you belong to a county may not be the best argument for this huge district. I've lived in 10 states, and I have seen the issues from Utah and all of those states. In North Carolina, you have the rich university town, and then outside of that, you have the very rural areas. In Florida, we have aerospace, and 2 miles later, cattle farming and orchards. This is an American issue, and I am number one in American, and number two, I chose to live in Utah. And so I chose to be here, and I choose to serve regardless of what county and regardless of my background, because I bring strengths based on my professional experience and my loyalty to, number one, limited state legislature involvement in local politics, number two, expanding your access to affordable and excellent health care, and number three, addressing air pollution now. And I do that from the perspective of someone who's making decisions based on what's best for the kids and what's best for families, what's best for the next generation. I don't need to like everyone I meet with day to day in my office, but I can take great care of the state president and his kids, and then the next one is a tattooed teenager. And even if I don't like someone, they know I love them and care for them, and I'm trying to do what's best for them. And I bring that to the legislature for you.
Thanks. Much like Eileen, I didn't choose to move here, my wife did. But I'm not going anywhere. I love Utah. I've been to a bunch of states, 47 states, 35 countries, all that kind of stuff. Great place, and wouldn't be anywhere else. I wouldn't be running here if I didn't think this was something I could add value to. Tonight's kind of interesting. Brian and I have been through a few of these on the Republican side. And one of the temptations is people ask you questions, and you say, how can I come up with a knowledgeable answer on this? We were out in Vernal, somebody asked the question about wild horses. What's your position on feral horses? So what I would tell you is, this has been laid out before, I think what you need, what I would think you might need in legislature, that's for you to decide, is someone who is wise enough to know what they don't know. If you don't know what you don't know, you get shot out of the saddle and you never saw it coming. You have to be smart enough to know what you don't know, and you need to surround yourself with people who do know. I've kind of put together a little kitchen cabinet already. I've got some verticals that are covered. I've got a few that aren't, but I would like to do that with the experts in their field who do not work for an association. I've already met the Utah Mining Association, Real Estate Association, Retailer Association. All these guys get paid by their industry to sort of jam stuff on you. You know what? I want to go in there knowing what I don't know and have access to the knowledge to actually make good decisions to be able to fight counterpoint and counterpoint. So that's how I come at this stuff. You know, we've talked about fact-based decisions. I'm a fact-based guy, not an anecdotal guy. I, too, want to have an office, and my office is going to be in Vernal, Brian. We're going to have lunch. I'm going to cover this. I want to be local. Local is where it is. I'm Jack Rubin. I really appreciate your time here.
The League of Women Voters would like to thank the candidates who are coming this evening and sharing your thoughts on all these important issues, and especially the audience for sharing your evening with us and writing your questions. We would also like to thank KPCW for recording tonight's forum. Listen later this week for radio coverage. Thank you, everybody, for coming.